You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. And we're opening up the mailbag today, something we usually do on Mondays, but because of the back-to-back games, we had to postpone it until midweek. Still, here we are, and we have questions about drafting Justice over Devin Booker, Bam over John Collins, and what the Heat will do next season without Dwayne Wade. But let's start with this question from Hayden, who writes in, "This might be too hypothetical, but where do you think Miami would be in the standings if they actually made the trade for Jimmy Butler? Knowing what we know now of all the players involved, is Miami better off?" First of all, Hayden, there is no such thing as too hypothetical for this podcast.
That's a fair point. I mean, we like to go into all sorts of different hypotheticals over the course of the season, and this is certainly one right up our alley. I don't know that we have a confirmation about what the exact trade package was supposed to be for Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. I think we've heard reports that it includes Josh Richardson, Kelly Olynyk, and a first-round pick. Is that right?
Yeah. And there were early talks about maybe Dragic and Justice Winslow before Justice signed the extension, right? And that salary wasn't quite as big,
right.
And it was a lot more movable. So we've heard a couple of different things. But yeah, let's assume then it was, I think the more, like the latest offer that was out there was Josh Richardson and either Kelly Olynyk or Deion or James Johnson, like one of those contracts. So let's assume for the sake of this, it's Olynyk and Josh Richardson.
Mm, okay. And in a first, obviously, that wouldn't have had any impact on
right.
the season.
Yep.
But so that's interesting. I mean, it's really difficult to kind of project exactly where this team would be. But let's say as far as his cohesion with Dwayne Wade would probably have been pretty apparent. I guess Wade mm-hmm. still would have been comfortable coming off the bench, and Jimmy would have been the go-to scorer in the starting lineup. So I think that's something that you could have probably hung your hat on. It's kind of hard for a team to build around a lead personality, but locker rooms and you and I have both been part of these where we've seen it play out. You know, they need a kind of structure, and you'd like that to be a cohesive one. You'd like it to be a friendly one, but that doesn't always have to be the case. And sometimes you just have to understand your place in the hierarchy of the locker room. And with a guy like Jimmy Butler, as antagonistic as he can be, at least there's probably a clear top of the chain mentality from him. And so I think everybody else would kind of fall in line. And that's been a problem, and one that only recently has kind of cleared up, as far as, again, having traded away Tyler Johnson and Wade Ellington changes the mentality of a lot of the players left on this roster. So when you get a guy like Jimmy, I think you probably would have, Goran Dragic would have taken a step back and deferred to Butler. I think Justice Winslow certainly would have done that. Deion Waiters.
Well, that's the thing, though, because the Justice Winslow wrinkle has big ripple effects here, because Goran Dragic, we can still assume, would not have been feeling great. The knee scope thing still would have happened, right? So he goes down for a few weeks, whatever. Jimmy Butler is the guy who steps in as the lead ball handler. It's not Justice who is all of a sudden in December elevated to point Justice, right? So we never get to see that, and we probably never really get to see Winslow blossom, because I don't know that he blossoms next to Jimmy Butler.
That's a good point, too.
Like, and so now we're looking at an offense or a team that is really built around Jimmy Butler, which isn't bad. I still think Jimmy Butler is a really good player, and I think all this stuff that's happened with him this year kind of has devalued him. I think he's still probably a top 15 player in the league, just in the right circumstance. It's just been an issue for him to find that. But is a starting unit now of Dragic, Jimmy Butler? I don't know. Is James Johnson might go down, but maybe so. Derrick Jones Jr. is maybe the power forward there. Justice Winslow might become repurposed as a stretch four. Whiteside probably still starts. Like, if Jimmy Butler's in place, you probably still go all in on that veteran movement. We probably never get this. Well, we certainly never get Justice, Josh, and Bam in the starting unit, and kind of this youth movement that has really pushed the Heat forward into the playoff race here. But I still think that with Jimmy Butler having that person in place, and that, again, like you said, structure in place, that and a power dynamic in place, I think the Heat would have. I don't think they would have struggled in the middle of the year as much as they did. So I actually think they probably would have had a better record now. I think they would have had a winning record probably right around wherever the Detroit Pistons or the Brooklyn Nets are right now, as far as maybe that six seed area.
Yeah, and you can't discount that with Butler in place there. Maybe they recognize that their window is a little bit more wide open than it was, and maybe Riley makes an additional move at the trade deadline. Who knows? There are many different steps that you would have followed from the acquisition of Butler early in the season. So if it had played out the way it is. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right as far as the higher win total. That's pretty clear. And, again, this isn't a knock on Josh, but I think it just – It's that kind of falling in line mentality, I think, that would have worked a lot better. So, yeah, there are positives in that we probably would have played better this season, but there are negatives also in that we'd probably never see the development of point justice.
So quickly, with that in mind, are the Heat – I know this – Hayden kind of meant better – is Miami better off as far as – this season, but going forward, are you glad they didn't make the trade?
I don't know. I still feel like – I don't know. I mean, I didn't want to have lost Josh in the process because I still have faith that he can kind of develop into another, take another level in his development. But Point Justice has been fun and he's been great. And maybe, you know, it's so much of this, and we'll talk about this when we get some of the additional, mailbag questions later in the show. But so much of a player's development has to do with fit and getting the opportunity, et cetera. So it's hard to know exactly what would have happened down the line. Maybe Justice kind of takes Butler's dominant personality and is encouraged by it or challenged by it, and then somehow becomes even better than the version of him that we're seeing right now. I mean, it's entirely possible. And
we got hypotheticals within hypotheticals now. This is great.
We could spend a whole show on this. I mean, does he knock out Whiteside? Does he get in Whiteside's face and say, "You come off the bench, or else"? You know, I mean, who knows with a guy like Jimmy? I mean. Dwayne is trying to, I mean, does the shine come off of Dwayne? You know, so much of this season has been him and his retirement tour. And now all of a sudden, with Jimmy in the lineup, does Dwayne take a back seat and not get the same kind of level of attention that he's getting now? I mean, who knows? Would we have been robbed of the 25-point game last night or the other 20-point game throughout the course of the season? There's so many things that change with Jimmy Butler's acquisition. And I still think they would have been better.
I'm glad they didn't make the trade, even though I was really pounding the table for that trade.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we're better off now because there's, even with Jimmy Butler in Philadelphia, one of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference right now, with a real opportunity here to go to the NBA Finals, there's still some rumblings that he might not resign, that he's not happy. And so I kind of feel like something is pulling him away, and it might be something pulling him towards Los Angeles with LeBron, maybe. Ooh. And I'm kind of glad, not because, I'm glad they didn't make the move because there was no guarantee of him re-signing in Miami. So much of that would have been based on what happened to this year, and there still were so many injuries that they would have had to overcome with or without Jimmy Butler. And you're losing a lot of depth if you make that Jimmy Butler trade, so it might even be harder to sustain those injuries, even though you still have a player like Jimmy who's able to kind of do things and put teams on his back the way he did last year in Minnesota. But if you trade Josh Richardson, a blue chip kind of player like him, and lose an asset like a first round pick coming this year, plus Olynyk, a nice player, for nothing, and Jimmy Butler walks away after one season, that's a bad trade. So I think they're in a good spot right now, and I don't know that Jimmy Butler necessarily would have made the difference between, like, okay, cool, now you're a sixth seed in the Eastern Conference versus the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference. Big whoop.
But one of the things that we had talked about, remember, is the fact that Jimmy's placement on the team makes it clear that he can probably lure another superstar free agent, maybe a guy like Kyrie Irving or somebody along those
lines. Yeah, but we also talked about, like, yeah, so he, like, with what cap space?
No, that was the other thing
with Miami. It was like, so, maybe in 2020 or 2021, but the Heat seem to be already in that mix anyway. So, yeah. Is Anthony Davis coming to Miami to play with Jimmy Butler? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Not at that point. Next week is Chris Bosh week. To celebrate Bosh's jersey being retired next Tuesday, we are dedicating the entire week to the most interesting member of the Big Three Heat. We'll have some great shows for you. Some of your favorite guests will be joining us, and a special Chris Bosh-themed mailbag. So get your Bosh questions in now at Locked On Heat on Twitter or by email, lockedonheat@gmail.com. Next week is Chris Bosh week. Stay tuned. Did you know that you could fill out a tourney bracket at DraftKings this year? That's right, DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, has a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone fills out a bracket during the tourney. Might as well do it on an award-winning app with tons of free prizes. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. Look, you know how brackets work. Before tip-off of the first game of the tournament, just pick the winner of every game, every round, and that's all there is to it. And the best part is, you could play for free with the code DRIBBLE. You can even set up a private group for you and your friends to compete for bragging rights. Download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now and use the code DRIBBLE to enter the bracket battle promotion for free and compete for your share of $64,000. That's the code DRIBBLE to enter the bracket battle for free only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Fidel writes in, what would be our best playoff matchup? David, Bucks, Toronto, those seem to be kind of the options here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see us rising all the way to six and challenging Philadelphia, perhaps. I mean, it's possible. Yeah, it's pretty unlikely, but... So, I mean, let's assume that's those three, then. I mean, given that, I'm not sure that there's an ideal matchup, but you kind of, in our discussion with Ben Golliver over at Locked On NBA yesterday, we talked about, you know, the injury situation out in the Eastern Conference, especially at the top of the East, and one of the things both of you pointed out was Malcolm Brogdon's, plantar fasciitis, the tear. Mm-hmm. And how that's going to limit him for about 6 to 8 weeks. I think that's the expected timetable. Yep. So he's expected back at some point, probably in the middle of the playoffs, or I guess in the first or second round, maybe by that point. And so, that it has a domino effect as far as how everybody else is able to play off of him and the kind of impact he's had and things of that sort. So will you go so far as to say that Brogdon's injury makes the Bucks more vulnerable or completely vulnerable at this point?
I mean, it makes them more vulnerable on the defensive end because now you're – and maybe this will change. It depends on what Mike Budenholzer, the coach there, decides to do. But in this last game without Malcolm Brogdon, they decided to go with Nikola Mirotic. So they actually increased their size, but I still think they lose something defensively because Mirotic isn't able to switch and guard other guards the way Brogdon is able to. And so I don't know. If you're the Heat or another opponent, maybe you're able to pounce on that. Maybe you're able to take advantage of that. We saw things recently between the Bucks and the Sixers, too, where Joel Embiid was really able to punish Brook Lopez in the middle. And I do think that, you know, Hassan Whiteside on a really good night could do something similar.
Coming off the bench.
But coming off the bench, too. Or maybe you start him in that series. Like, I don't know. I don't know. But Milwaukee's so freaking good. They've been the best team all season. So it's almost like... You'd be crazy to say that would be the better matchup versus Toronto with a banged up Kyle Lowry, a Kawhi Leonard, who, by the way, is everybody keeps talking about how much time LeBron has missed. Kawhi Leonard has played as many games as LeBron, and that's more by this weird rest program that he's on. Like, is he capable of playing 100% in a full playoff series? Like, I don't know. Like, you assume he is, but that was a weird. Mysterious injury that he was coming off of last year, and he still hasn't been able to play a full slate of schedules, a full slate of games here in Toronto. So I would probably go with the Raptors. Their bench isn't as strong as it used to be. Jeremy Lin had a nice night in place of Kyle Lowry on Monday night, but I still don't trust him necessarily. It hasn't been a great fit there. The Ibaka Marcus Gasol thing is still sort of weird, and I actually think the Heat might be able to have an advantage there just because of the chemistry between Bam and Whiteside.
Maybe. I just feel like that passing style exploits all of Miami's weaknesses. You know, I think with the zone defense, you know, it can be limited. And again, you've talked a number of times that you don't think the zone will be there in the postseason. There won't be a weapon that they'll go to in the postseason. I'm not so sure about that. But at the same time, if they do implement it against Toronto, it'll be a non-factor. In fact, it'll lead to Toronto building, as they did recently, a big lead. So I'm not sure. I really don't know. I'm trying to think about that Milwaukee matchup because I think that's the most likely one anyway. It'll probably be a 1-versus-8 matchup. Right. And if that's the case, do you go back to the previous starting lineup with James Johnson playing the way he has and then Hassan Whiteside, who might be able to – make an impact against Brook Lopez? I mean, that seems like the more likely case, but then you're messing with the lineup. And again, then you're deferring to what Budenholzer in Milwaukee does as opposed to dictating terms on your own. So I wonder if that's how Spoelstra would adjust, or rather keep the things going the way they are and then let Budenholzer make the adjustments.
Not going to be pretty either way. Ming writes in, I understand Booker is a better scorer and non-Heat fans view him as better than Justice. Devin Booker, Ming is talking about here. However, they're both in their fourth year, and Justice has made three playoff runs. Booker hasn't been to the playoffs at all. How much do you guys think playoff experience matters in the grand scheme of things? David, this is a pretty interesting question. We're actually going to see a version of this happen based on in the Western Conference. The Denver Nuggets, after a six-year drought of not making the playoffs, have promising young players like Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. How do they react, especially with home court advantage in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. DeMarcus Cousins has never played in the playoffs. He will with the Warriors this year. Like, we'll get to see some of these, like, promising players. Not that DeMarcus Cousins is promising. He's a legit all-star. But, you know, so, like, in Denver's case, promising players, young players, how do they react to a playoff setting? But I remember going back to when Justice Winslow was a rookie, and he reacted pretty positively in the playoffs. Like, he was the most versatile player, one of the best players for the Heat. During that playoff stretch.
I think it's an individual thing, really. I think it's not necessarily... It's funny, you kind of say, well, you need the experience of the playoffs to kind of define the player, but I think the player is already defined by the time they make to the playoffs. And they kind of... Their reaction to the playoffs, I think, you can kind of foretell how it's going to shake out based on how they adjust and make, you know, adjustments during the course of the regular season. And even in his rookie year, like Justice Winslow guarded, I'll never forget, and during a particularly good stretch, he guarded Paul George, LeBron James, and James Harden over like a week stretch or a two-week stretch. And so you already knew that he was up for the challenge, at least defensively. And you know, that was what he was being asked to do. So as far as the playoff runs or not, I mean, look, Devin Booker's on a bad team. Justice Winslow was brought in as a role player on a veteran-laden team with Chris Bosh and eventually Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng, etc. So his role was much more limited, much more defined. I wonder, though, if, like, you know, if culture may not, if Devin Booker may not necessarily know how to prepare for the playoffs, and maybe he's on a team right now where nobody has any playoff experience, with the exception of maybe Tyler Johnson. He's all of a sudden, and Kelly Oubre, I guess, they've become the veteran.
Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. But even Jamal, he's not exactly the lead dog there at any point. You know, right. He's a guy who was a role player on whatever teams made it to the playoffs themselves. And so I wonder how Booker is ready for that challenge, and we won't know until he makes the playoffs.
Right. That's an interesting point, because Justice Winslow, as a rookie, was joining already a playoff team, right? Like, that probably is more important than the actual playoff experience, because they could teach you how to get ready for the playoffs. But if you're the Phoenix Suns, you're a young team, and I guess you're like, you know, the corollary to that would be whatever is happened in Philadelphia, where you sort of build from the ground up with draft picks, and you get to the playoffs and you experience something, and you saw last year in Philadelphia, they're outright talent. They were able to beat Miami in the first round. But in that second round, they were way more talented than the Boston Celtics. And Boston was without Kyrie Irving. But they got beat bad by Boston because you had guys like Al Horford and this structure in place.
I would say...
A team that had been to the playoffs. So, and they wiped the floor with Philadelphia. So I think that maybe that in that case, it does matter.
I would say that I would expect Devin to struggle in the playoff series, because given that he is somewhat limited as far as his versatility is concerned, I think defenses would find a way to key on him in a seven-game series, and they would be able to mitigate what he can do offensively, and that would be a problem. And so you wouldn't see his impact defensively, because he's just not a very, very good defender. And so I think he would be exploited a little bit. That's not to say that he wouldn't find an opportunity there, but a lot of that depends on the team he's playing with, too. So as long as he can focus on his role, that's fine. But right now, he is the top player on that team, and that's problematic because, again, he lacks playoff experience.
R.Mayer writes in, has there been any discussion, internal or external, about drafting John Collins over Bam? I love Bam, but I have to admit, Collins is a beast. Well, first of all, external, we're having this conversation right now, so yes. Internal... internally in the Heat, we know that the Heat worked out John Collins. Right. They discussed John Collins. They ended up going with Bam Adebayo, but that Bam pick, we all remember, was kind of a surprise pick. A lot of people had John Collins penciled into the Heat. And a lot of mock drafts had him, you know, going anywhere between Miami at 14 or Portland, I think, at like 16 or 17 or something like that. And it was kind of – and so that was like right in the John Collins zone. But no, they selected Bam. And look, I'm happier about it because I think that there's a clear roadmap of like how Bam fits into whatever the NBA looks like 2, 3, 4 years from now. I'm not sure what John Collins is, even though he's putting up really good numbers for a bad team over the last couple of years.
Here's the thing, though, right? And that's what I was kind of hinting at in our previous segment, is that when we talk about a player's development or their numbers and stuff like that, a lot of that has to do with fit. Like, I mean, you look at what this team is, the Atlanta Hawks, I mean, and, you know, what is Collins... If Collins wasn't putting up big numbers there, I'd be much more surprised. I'd be more apt to call him maybe not a bust, but a player not ready for the opportunity then. And you look at Bam's case, and he's been coming off the bench. He's been fighting in the rotation with guys like Olynyk and Whiteside, James Johnson and others. He hasn't quite found a place there. And again, like what we were talking about Winslow before, he's a role player on a team that was looking to make the playoffs. And so, again, in his second year, I mean, I think I prefer Bam's defensive versatility over what Collins can provide as maybe a rim protector. Where do you stand on that?
I agree. And I think, you know, the only thing that Collins had, and even a guy, Jared Allen in Brooklyn, who's also picked after, they had a big opportunity to develop. And I was very concerned at the start of the season that Bam wasn't getting that opportunity. And that was going to hurt him. But now he's starting. He's in this, and he is getting an opportunity. And we talked about this in our last recap about how much more comfortable he's looking now, and that's been huge, and that's been a big relief too. Like, look, he probably won't. He's not going to be in the dunk contest. Probably he's not going, even though he could. But like, he's not this high volume guy like John Collins is. But like, is John Collins like Enes Kanter, like better Enes Kanter, or is he
more athletic, explosive Enes Kanter?
Yeah, but like, you know, a points and rebounds guy, right? Like, is that where he is? Is he a five? Is he like this? Is he supposed to be a stretch four if he can eventually develop an outside shot? I don't know, but I at least know exactly what Bam is supposed to be. And so, with that, I think Bam still has a higher ceiling than John Collins, but both of them are great. And Jared Allen in Brooklyn is also great. Absolutely. So a lot of big men taken in that draft that ended up panning out. It looks like for now. Claudia writes in, what are we going to do without Dwayne Wade next year? Looks like we may be screwed. LOL. David, what are we going to do without D-Wade next year? Because he's been huge for this playoff stretch. Can anybody sort of replace that bench production?
I don't see it, to be honest with you. I mean, I think you'd have to see if the roster undergoes any kind of changes between this season and next, aside from just the loss of Dwayne Wade. Again, I think there's just so many the players on this roster kind of defer to him a little bit, and he's just capable of doing things in a way that that nobody else on this roster can right now. Like his ability to get to the line, his ability to create his own shot, even at 37, might still be better than anybody else's on this team, second to just Dion, I guess. I mean, it's hard to say, right? But if you had to rank...
But Dion doesn't make the shots. He can create his own shots. Yeah.
Good point. So, I mean, there's something to be said about that, even at 37. And so, he's getting a lot of opportunities. I mean, go ahead.
I think it comes down to, like, you're not going to replace Dwayne Wade as far as this guy coming off the bench, this veteran presence. But the Heat are still below 500, and they're probably going to finish the year below 500 still, just based on the schedule coming up. But
wow,
like, or maybe they finish right around 500. You know what I mean? Like, they're still not like great, you know. And I think even if the Heat kind of sneak into the playoffs here, I don't want to like mistake them sneaking into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference as an 8 seed as being all of a sudden a playoff type team. They're really not, right? And so, I think when Dwayne Wade walks away, you really look towards not necessarily replacing him on like a binary basis, but you just say, all right, now it's time for Justice, Josh, and Bam to take that next step. We don't want to have to rely on this veteran presence off the bench to bail us out. Let's just go be a good basketball team based around these three guys. Again, if there's no other major changes, you know, you just got to get higher level talent so that you basically are avoiding this late season playoff push.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then having Haslam back next year possibly will be big for the culture. So I think that's a big part of it, too.
You're sold on that. You after talking to him, you're pretty sure that he's coming back.
He's coming back.
Wow.
He's coming back. Fire Emoji writes in, rank Justice, Josh, and Bam 1-3 by how Heat fans see them. and rank them by how non-Heat fans may see them. I'm going. Like, I appreciate the question for Fire Emoji. I'm gonna flip the question a little bit. We can rank them by how Heat fans see them, I guess. Well, I guess that's just you and me because we're the only people on here. But instead of non-Heat fans, let's go by what you and I think other front offices would rank them, because we played this game in our big Miami Heat season preview. We polled our listeners about how they rank, and a lot of people had Bam number one,
mm-hmm.
or you know, a few people had Josh number one. I think maybe we've got one response with Justice being number one. That may have flipped here with Point Justice.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. As far as our rank or my rank, I guess specifically. Yeah. This is, you know, in context of the season, in context of their future with the team, I'd still say, look, if I'm just limiting it to this season's context, I would have to say it's probably 1, 2, 3 as is by Fire Emoji, Justice, Josh, and Bam.
Just their production this year.
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at Justice and the step that he's taken up, the impact he's made. Like Josh makes an impact. And you know that I like Josh personally, and then I have hopes that he'll be able to develop further. But at the same time, like, I think over the last couple games, with Justice's absence there due to injury, you kind of see that starting lineup fall apart a little bit. And I still think that he's making a bigger impact.
Like,
there's too many quiet nights for Richardson, even when he's not scoring, he does other things. He can rebound, he can make plays, he can, you know, harass on defense, etc. I mean, but so can Justice. So I think Justice's impact is currently bigger than Josh's.
Yeah, and Bam is just, he's coming along, but it's been late in the season, right? He hasn't been doing this all season long. So
that's right.
It's actually kind of funny, because if you had to break you and I up into two camps, Team Justice or Team Josh, you would be definitely Team Josh, and I think I would definitely be Team Justice, like, if that's you had to pick.
Yeah.
But I'll actually disagree with you. I think I would go Josh Richardson, then Justice Winslow, then Bam.
That's fair.
Only because, and maybe it's a tough love thing, maybe we just we expect more from our guys, you know, respectively, but I just think Josh Richardson, from the beginning of the season to now, has just put up so many 20-point games. He has just been there as a scorer. I just feel like from the start to the finish of the season, he's just been more consistent, even though you could argue that Justice has been better since mid-December. So I'll go with Josh, Brad. But let's talk about non-Heat fans / like other front offices, other teams. You know, they're looking at the Heat. Let's talk about them as far as assets go, because I think that's an interesting way to take this. Justice, Josh, Bam. Who would be the most valuable asset of that grouping?
I think they would see it as Josh, Bam, Justice. 1, 2, 3 in that sense. I think Justice, I think his athleticism is limited, and I think that's something that there would be a problem with. I think they see him as a secondary ball handler, even though he's running the point right now. I don't think they see him as explosive, as a playmaker, or anything like that. And so he needs the right fit, and Miami always seems to be in that position where they bring the most out of a specific player. And so I think when other teams are looking at just raw athleticism or raw potential impact and fit, guys like Josh and Bam are probably easier to slide into those other rosters, 29 other rosters, and make a positive impact immediately, whereas Justice, I think, would struggle a little bit finding that fit.
Yeah, and I think other teams, like, the question would be, well, Justice is playing really well for Miami, but do we have to give him the ball all the time for him to play this well? And that would be the biggest question, right? Where you can see, like, there's an easy way to just see Josh plugging in as a 3-and-D guy. Bam, plugging in as your, you know, your switch everything center. It's really easy. So I agree. Josh, Bam, and then Justice. That's probably how they rank as assets. But and those are legitimate questions, by the way. Like, those are, smart front offices would have those legitimate questions. But Josh Richardson, he's just a plug-and-play guy. We've even seen Philadelphia fans being like, can we trade Jimmy Butler for Josh Richardson? Like, we would have taken that deal if Minnesota didn't. Like,
well, they also fell in love with Robert Covington while he was there, was kind of a perfect extension of that. So as far as non-Heat fans, I think they probably see Josh 1, Justice 2, and Bam 3. I think they're still, you know, with Whiteside on this team and being the dominant player that he is, or dominant personality anyway, I think nobody's really seen what Bam can do. And
people aren't watching a lot of Heat games right now.
And going back to the John Collins question, it's like, you know, John Collins is making all rookie teams, and he's going to the Schick rookie challenge in the All-Star game. Bam has done nothing of note. And so I think, you know, he's not being viewed in that light from a wide swath of fans.
You can connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, including Spotify. Rate, review, and say nice things about us. Check out the Patreon page for exclusive content that helps support the show. Don't forget, next week is Chris Bosh week. Get your Chris Bosh mailbag questions in now. Thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.